as we finished off the other side of that tape, you were talking about the USN and their winch system for their Dash helicopter program. And
yes, I believe they were fully supported of that program, and until it folded and they gave it up, they were not interested in the Canadian system from a purchasing or supporting the development point of view. Although at the local level, from the very beginning, Patuxent River Naval Air Test Center was fully supportive of the program. People like Joe Sosnikowski had done their test pilot training there, and new people there. And very much on a personal basis, the work was arranged, and we paid for it, but at a very reduced rate, I'm sure.
Was the system that the Americans used for their drone helicopters, was that a constant tension winch system?
I know nothing about that system.
All right.
Yeah, so I can't say. I believe it was. I mean, it had the title, but more than that, I don't know.
All right. So how long were you with DGA as project officer for the haul down and winch system trials?
That would be from the very beginning of 63 to the summer of 68. I was with DGA.
So you had gone through the not only the Assiniboine trials, but you'd gone through the Annapolis trials and the Nipigon. So what would you say are the major changes or modifications from sort of the original prototype to the system that was used on Nipigon, which was the last of the trial ships before the bear trap was declared operational by the Canadian Navy?
Yeah, well, it was not declared operational until it got into Saguenay.
All right.
Okay, the final thing and the final trials that proved that it met, were done by VX-10 in Saguenay, and that was considered acceptable. The control system for the winch was the first problem, to introduce the rope accumulators and to then upgrade the control system. And that was a major delay. Delaying the program, there were other things that had to be done at the same time, which were not related to what my part of work was. Strengthening the bear trap was a major concern to get that in. The tail probe, getting the adaptations for that to the helicopter and to the deck, because we had to redesign the whole tail grid, the tail probe grid layout. The introduction of the tail guiding winches was another factor that was a major change, addition. The major change in the whole operation, because for the straightening of the helicopter initially, there were some things called chevron bars.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole point was that by running the tail probe, pulling it back on this, you would center the probe in the track, and then by further moving it, you'd straighten the helicopter. The trouble was that was a lot of force on the probe and on the tires, because there was a very short arm, less than about a foot or something, to put a torque on the helicopter. And so we thought we tail guiding winches would be a good idea from the very beginning, but the concept, there's just no space for the kind of machinery we initially saw as needed for that. So it wasn't until somewhat later in the program that we conceived of a redesign of this a hydraulic system that would fit in the space available.
So would that have come out of the Annapolis trials or the Nipigon trials?
That came out of the, where did they go in? I would say Annapolis, if not a single one.
All right.
It took a while to develop them. Again, they took another lot of money, design and prototype construction.
So it's possible that when Assiniboine went back in for refit to enlarge her hangar in order to embark the Sea King, because when she started her conversion, the Navy was going to procure the Cayman helicopter, which was rejected for technical and engineering problems, and we acquired the much larger Sea King. Is it possible then that the tail guiding system could have been fitted aboard Assiniboine then when she went in for her conversion or refit on the hangar?
It was fitted to all the ships eventually, but when Assiniboine left the trials program, because we were still doing trials, none of them had helicopters. So she, I think she remained as is or picked up some of the modifications. But the trouble was, from the whole program, that further modifications were made. And so even though Sinemoyne had a widened hangar, they had to put more things in.
Right.
In the subsequent ships, fire pumps.
Mm-hmm.
The pumps for fighting a fire on the deck were considered inadequate. Well, that didn't get in till late in the program. It was a sort of thing that was resisted for some time, and then at some point it was agreed to. And so in the end of the program, when we had all the modifications that were needed, there had to be a whole survey of the ships to see what each ship had,
mm-hmm.
because things had to be done on a sort of like an overnight job in the dockyard, and nobody had good drawings or records of what was done on each ship.
All right.
So they had to normalize the ships to the final design.
Now, I'm not very familiar with the Nipigon trials. Was that because I understand that Annapolis was responsible for carrying out the night flying trials and the heavy weather trials. Mm. What was Nipigon tasked to do as it relates to the trials?
Well, in my recollection, Sinemoyne had to go in for refit, which would have delayed the trials if she was to continue. So the whole thing was transferred to Nipigon. And so, in other words, as Annapolis peeled off in the dockyard, Nipigon steamed out and carried on with the trials. The difficulty was there was that Annapolis had the Sinemoyne had the prototype winch,
mm-hmm.
so the program was such that not only had they gone ahead with the ships, they had gone ahead with production quote winch systems and bear traps. So Annapolis had a quote production system fitted, but it wasn't approved, and so it was just carried on doing trials on that.
Were the Nipigon trials very short in comparison to the Assiniboine or Annapolis trials in terms of...
I don't recall them as being shorter or longer. I don't have dates, but my recollection is a progression of problems to achieving a viable system.
I assume that with the Nipigon trials that there was probably less to work out or rectify as it relates to the haul down and winch system as opposed to Assiniboine and Annapolis? Would that be an accurate thing?
As we got closer to the end, things were falling into place to a greater degree. And I can't remember what was still needed in Nipigon. Little things were needed. For instance, on the bear trap, they said the LSO can't see it clearly enough to tell whether it's locked properly.
Right.
In other words, before I tell the pilot to shut down, is the bear trap holding the helicopter? So we had to design signs, little flags. So when the locks went into place,
mm-hmm.
little flags went up.
Actually in the bear trap
itself?
Actually
in the bear trap. And you could see that flick up, and that flick up, and it says, yep, you're locked.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, would that have been replaced later by some sort of light on a control panel in the LSOs?
You've got me. Replaced or supplemented. I think the original locks indicator stayed that, but probably a light, because night operations, which eventually came about, might have required a light.
Yeah, that would, because it would have been extremely difficult to see a little flag popping up in,
okay.
in the, I assume, would have been very yeah. difficult to see in the middle of the night in the middle of the North Atlantic, as opposed yeah. to a light
I just don't remember the light.
That's the first I'd ever heard of that, about the yeah. flags coming up on the bear trap. That's very interesting.
Yeah. I think if you look at a bear, if you examine the 205 class, 265, the initial DDH program, you still see the flags are still there.
Right. Well, that's very interesting. Yeah. And eventually they
But that, I use that as typical of a little modification that had to come in. I think there were... I can't remember them all, but that said this didn't work, and that, locks, there was something else on the arms to bringing them together and locking them. I can't remember that, though.
All right.
The actual mechanical details escaped me.
Yeah, there would have been so much to be concerned about, too, because there's so many different systems on board the ship.
Yeah, well, a lot of these, of course... Then VX-10 said, we need this.
Mm-hmm.
And Variation said, well, we can do it this way. And maybe I might get a message saying, or make it a sketch in the mail, and quick, try it, go, you know. The trials are held up until we get something like this in.
During your time in Ottawa with the DGA, do you have any recollection or memories of foreign navies approaching headquarters that were interested in our bear trap and haul down system?
I remember some Japanese delegate group coming to Ottawa, and I know it was during the trials because we did caution them. We said, we do, you know, it's not, everything's not all worked out. It's not ready to go. So don't just go and buy one of those and pretend, you know, expect it to work. But they did eventually buy one, and one of the trials pilots, Larry Zbitnew, you may have his name?
Yes, I do.
Went and did a lot of work with them. Now, I don't know anything more about what happened to that system. And the Germans bought one, I believe.
Right.
I don't know anything more about that.
Do you remember the U.S. Coast Guard coming up and being there for the trials?
No, I don't. The only thing I remember was late when they were operational was Fraser went down to Washington and put on a demonstration for some U.S. Navy staff out of the Pentagon or out of somewhere there.
Mm-hmm. So there was quite a bit of interest in our system. Even at that time,
oh,
and probably more interest later once it was.
I think there was to the extent for navies that weren't into aircraft carriers. I think for navies that were into aircraft carriers, there were only the troubled concern that because aircraft carriers are so expensive, that their civilian masters would say, "Well, look, it's cheaper to put helicopters and destroyers than to build aircraft carriers." I think that was a reservation. In many of the minds. So I don't know how the USN, how enthusiastic they were about it. I know at the operational level they were extremely interested in how things went, and there were some interesting trials and operational trials that did that. I don't know. I'm not fully aware of that.
You were there at headquarters in DGA and for almost 4 years. Would that have been considered normal, or is that explained in part because we're starting to go through integration and your...
It was integration. We're going through integration. Somewhere in the beginning of that, where the professional career plans for technical officers was in turmoil, I could have gone back to steam engineering. I could have gone to the Air Force side when we integrated, but I think it was the demands of the project. In other words, to keep some continuity there.
Right.
We more or less were pretty good with continuity. People, Lieutenant Commander Charlton was there through the critical times.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Commander Balson, actually, who I spoke mentioned earlier, succeeded Lieutenant Commander Charlton in VX-10. In the latter stage of the trials, I don't know exactly when. So that's why I was in headquarters, I think. For continuity, I suspect, was the main reason. I certainly wasn't asking to get out. I was extremely interested in what I was doing.
Right.
And I did not have any desire to move from that.
Does the name John Frank
yes.
ring a bell?
Yes.
Was he in DAE during your time when you were in Ottawa with DGA?
I mentioned the Commander Dickinson I worked for. He was Commander Dickinson's predecessor. He was involved in the development of the bear trap concept. It's already described in that one book about how that came about, I think. Certified Service Bowl. I think that's got a bit on how he and some people got together and said, I think a bear trap would look like this.
Right.
And the variation went and made something from that.
Okay. That's just somebody else I have to track down. Is there anything else that you'd like to add about the haul down and winch system? As it relates to the time period that you were there, 63 through 68, and the three separate trials, Is there anything that you think has been missed or overlooked?
Well, in the context of our discussion, the tail guiding winches might be a little bit misunderstood. The problem that was that between when you secured the helicopter and the worst sea conditions, the tail probe took some of the loads. Now, when you're maneuvering the helicopter and you release the tail probe to let it swing back and forth with a straightening operation until you had re-engaged it in the center slot, it was not there to take any loads. So the idea was to put some guiding winches on it that could be prepared to hold it
right
while you were maneuvering it. And they had a ring on each side of the helicopter and a winch cable outlet on each corner of the deck. And the idea was that it could do two things. One, if there was any difficulty in maneuvering, you could apply power to the appropriate winch and assist the motions needed to straighten the helicopter. If there was a severe ship movement, you could lock both winches and they would take the loads that the tail probe was to have taken.
All right.
The difficulty had been that with the speed at which the tail was swinging, to get a motor with sufficient capacity, hydraulic motor and pump with sufficient capacity to keep up with that, would take too much space. The solution was that we realized we could develop a system, and a system was developed that would, the fluid displaced by the winch being pulled out was fed back to the winch pulling in, so that it kept tension on it.
All right.
At least. In other words, if the tail was swinging wildly, there would be enough fluid to keep that cable taut.
Mm-hmm.
If you required tension to pull it that way, of course, it would all go much slower because it would then be dictated by the speed at which the winch could move.
So this particular piece of machinery, would it have been located centrally underneath the deck in order to cut down on the length of piping in either direction?
Well, the winches for that were in the winch compartment with the rest of the hydraulic machinery.
All right.
And there was a sheathing arrangement for the cables to be fed from there, one to each corner of the flight deck.
So this was another alteration and addition that came out of the trial?
This came off somewhat late. And when that became clear that worked, we then said, well, we don't need the chevron bars, which were the original things to straighten with.
Right.
And they stuck up on the deck, and they were in the way. So it was quite easy. You just unbolted those and took them away. So that came late in the program. That was in Lieutenant Commander Balson's time. I remember him phoning up and saying, look, you know, we just don't need those. Do we take them away? And on the basis of a phone call, that was, they unbolted them. They were removed from the design of the hull down system.
That was a very quick decision then.
Well, that was the sort of decisions we could make at that time. And you see, during the whole of the integration period, it was almost, apart from the money, because then we didn't have people at Treasury Board trusted giving good presentations, because I worked for an Air Force colonel, and they didn't really know what was going on. I mean, there were jokes going on when the Air Force tried to run naval aviation at sea. They just couldn't understand some of the differences. And so it meant what I could say was acted on, you know, as a lieutenant commander. To somebody's embarrassment once, but it's another story. And we could do these things quickly. But I moved around to these provinces, and I virtually had a couple of file cabinets which followed me, and that was the whole project, and it just moved with me from Navy to Air Force, and I worked from the Navy, DG Air in the Navy, and then because we integrated naval aviation to the Air Force, I worked for an Air Force colonel for a while, and then because they decided the Navy really wanted to know what was going on with this, because I was dealing with things in ships, I moved over to DGMS, the Marine Systems people, and I worked under them. And they, of course, I was working on aircraft stuff to some degree, and they weren't responsible for that, so it was a little bit mixed up, and I had a lot of freedom in many ways.
When you talk about the modifications to the tail winch guiding system. Is that something that that VX-10 had a large role to play, or was this something that DGA and headquarters contributed a great deal, or a combination of both?
Well, the story of that is this part of it in VX-10. I talked with Lieutenant Commander Balson about it before, and so he was aware of the intentions there, and the story Peter Charles says he sketched out a thing on that. But I had talks with Ferries before that. They had quoted a ridiculous figure to put it in, and so we just, because there wasn't any money anyway, that was sort of shelved. But when I knew of a problem, it always kept niggling, you know, if you wouldn't go away. So that's when I'd been talking to Dowdies about hydraulics and things like that. And I fiddled around with some drawings and got the idea that you could use what's called a regenerative system to make it sound sophisticated. But all you use is the thing that's supposed to be a motor. You use it as a pump to supply fluid to the...
to either side.
To the other side, yeah.
Right.
And that, of course, that meant that your actual pump to supply the system was reasonably quite small. And I remember how it just fits in now.
So that would fit into the existing machinery spaces that were available instead of having to deal with a much larger industrial system, I suppose. So how would you, or what would you attribute the success of the entire program to if you had to put it down to a few key factors?
I think necessity was one thing. It was essential for the RCN to put helicopters on the ships to maintain an operational capability. They precipitated the conversion, and therefore there was no turning back from the project. It wasn't one of those things like the hydropoid. You say, "Oh, we don't feel like that. We'll shelve it." They were stuck with it.
Right.
Our size. The fact that we could communicate freely with each other, the X-10, the dockyards, we knew each other, probably all knew each other personally beforehand, pretty close. And I think those are the main things. The capability of the people involved. We had excellent people in each place. There was this, you know, some people that other parts, you might say, didn't respond as intelligently or as quickly as they could have, but I think the key place is excellent officers, technicians, contractors, people.
How would you characterize the quality of the liaison staff, both in the UK and the US, and sharing of information between the respective navies to either rule something out and say, no, this doesn't work, or yes, we're interested in this, and this may help us on our particular project? How would you sum that up?
Not much of that took place during my time there. It had taken place before, and I think people like Ken Gibbs, and there was Johnny Frank might know something was involved in some of that, and Dave Cruikshank, who was involved in my predecessor on that.
So by the time you're in Ottawa, the project is far enough along.
We were committed. Nobody was going to tell us no anymore. We weren't sort of asking questions or whether it's difficult. We were stuck with it. We had to go. And I think we walked into problems. I walked into the control system problem not knowing enough to ask the right questions before we got a contractor.
But this is understandable if one remembers that not only was the RCN committed, but the RCN was the only one that was doing this.
But, you know, we had the right people and the control system. I just didn't consult the right ones beforehand, and we ended up with a lot of problems.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add today as it relates to the project?
I just say, you know, my personal feelings on it. I've heard of very few problems with it, and I don't know whether that's just the grace of God. But I think it's also the result of a lot of hard work and dedication of people all through the thing, and that have kept it going since, of course, because things have to be looked after in service.
Right.
My son has been flying Sea Kings got quite a few hours and a few years on that. And of course, to know that he's been able to fly that comparatively safely as far as that is, I have a lot of satisfaction in that. So it was the major high point of my career being involved in that. And so I have no regrets on that at all.
Well, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. I'll certainly appreciate it.
Thank you for your interest and your hard work.